Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to be taking a deep dive into a world that's buzzing with innovation. No stir, e-cash, and even a touch of AI in the mix. It seems like you're really interested in how these emerging technologies are kind of converging to reshape the internet, particularly social media and online payments. We've got a fascinating stack of sources to explore, so let's jump right in.
Yeah, the sources really do paint a picture of a desire for greater control and privacy in the digital realm. And what's really captivating is how these seemingly distinct concepts, social media, payments, and AI, are weaving together. It's all about forging these new paths for interaction, transactions, and content creation in ways we haven't seen before.
Okay, so let's start with Nostr, this decentralized social media protocol that's generating a lot of buzz. The sources you've shared emphasize Nostr's unique selling proposition. No central servers, meaning no single entity holds the reins.
Right. And you know what's really intriguing is that this decentralized structure fosters resilience and censorship resistance. The sources describe Nostr's use of relays, which are essentially independent servers that distribute content, like specialized post offices for social media updates.
So anyone can run a relay.
Yeah, anyone can run a relay, and users can choose which ones they connect to, granting them control over their data flow.
So it's like curating your own social media experience. But with so many relays out there, how do users even begin to navigate this decentralized landscape? I mean, it sounds a bit like the Wild West out there.
You're right. It does have that frontier feel to it. The sources actually provide some really interesting examples of the diversity of Nostr relays. There's one that specifically forbids any mention of Bitcoin.
Wow.
While another caters exclusively to a Christian community. And then there's a relay just for fountain pen enthusiasts.
Fountain pens? That's incredible. It seems like Nostr is fostering niche communities in a way that traditional platforms haven't been able to. But some relays even require payment in Bitcoin to join. Is this a glimpse into how content creation might be monetized in this decentralized world?
Absolutely. That's one of the fascinating threads running through these sources. It highlights how Nostr is blurring the lines between social interaction and digital payments. And speaking of payments, let's dive into the world of eCash on Nostr, which is where things get really interesting.
Yes, the sources mention a protocol called Cashew that enables eCash transactions on the Bitcoin blockchain. I have to admit, I'm still wrapping my head around how it all works. Could you break it down for us?
Certainly. Cash uses mints, which are like digital banks that hold Bitcoin and issue eCash tokens in return. These tokens function similarly to physical cash. You know, they're like digital bearer instruments. Whoever possesses the token controls the value. It's a way to transact value directly peer-to-peer without relying on a central authority to track everything.
So instead of relying on a central server to track balances and transactions, eCash transactions happen directly between users. Mm. That sounds incredibly private. What role does the mint play in all of this?
The mint's role is limited to the initial issuance of eCash tokens in exchange for Bitcoin and the final redemption of those tokens back into Bitcoin. It doesn't monitor individual transactions, which enhances privacy. It's like a currency exchange where you convert your dollars to euros, but they don't keep track of where you spend those euros.
That makes sense. The sources also mentioned Nostr wallets like Enets and Minibis that integrated eCash using Cashew. So now you can send a direct message on Nostr with some digital cash tucked inside. What are the implications of that?
That's one of the most intriguing aspects. It opens up all sorts of possibilities, especially for micropayments and content monetization. For example, one source highlights how eCash could revolutionize the way we pay for streaming services, allowing us to pay for individual frames of video instead of being locked into monthly subscriptions. Imagine having a pay-per-second model for video content.
That level of granularity is mind-boggling. What other examples did the sources provide?
Another source dives into the fascinating world of offline eCash payments. This involves locking eCash tokens to a recipient's public key, even when they're offline. Imagine leaving a digital envelope of cash for someone they don't even need to be online to receive it.
Wow, that opens up possibilities for people without reliable internet access. Could you walk us through a real-world example of how an offline eCash payment would work?
Absolutely. Let's say you want to pay someone who lives in a remote area with intermittent internet connectivity. You could lock the eCash payment to their public key, essentially creating a digital IOU. The next time they connect to the network, even days or weeks later, they can claim the payment.
That's incredible. It sounds like offline eCash payments could be a game changer for financial inclusion, especially in regions with limited internet infrastructure. But one question that keeps popping up is, does eCash actually help scale Bitcoin? Some of the sources seem to contradict each other on this point.
That's a crucial point, and the sources actually provide a nuanced perspective on this. While eCash can certainly encourage the broader adoption and use of Bitcoin, it doesn't magically solve the technical limitations of Bitcoin's base layer scalability.
So it's not about making the Bitcoin blockchain itself faster, but rather expanding the ways people can use Bitcoin.
Exactly. It's about expanding the utility of Bitcoin without putting additional strain on the blockchain itself. Think of it as building a more efficient on-ramp to a highway with a fixed number of lanes. You're improving access and flow without changing the highway's capacity.
That's a helpful analogy. But the sources also touch on a rather unexpected player in the eCash world: central banks. It seems they're exploring the use of eCash for their own central bank digital currencies, CBDCs. Isn't that a bit ironic?
It is quite ironic, isn't it? Central banks, known for their control and oversight, are now considering a technology that prioritizes privacy and individual empowerment. One source specifically mentions a project called GTailer, which is an eCash-based CBDC system being explored in Europe.
So are central banks genuinely interested in providing more privacy to citizens? Or are they looking for ways to maintain control while offering a semblance of privacy?
That's the million-dollar question. Some experts suggest that central banks might be realizing that they need to address privacy concerns to gain public trust in their CBDCs. Others are more skeptical, suggesting that they might be seeking ways to implement controlled privacy, where they can still track and surveil transactions when it suits their interests.
That's certainly a valid concern. It seems like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too. Maintain control, while also offering a semblance of privacy. Whether they'll be successful remains to be seen. But for now, it's fascinating to see how eCash is making its way into these unexpected domains.
It really highlights how the quest for privacy and financial freedom is gaining momentum. People are seeking alternatives to traditional systems, and technologies like eCash are emerging as potential solutions.
Welcome back. We've just begun to explore this fascinating convergence of Nostr, eCash, and the future of the internet. I'm particularly intrigued by eCash and how it could be used for so much more than just, you know, like, direct payments.
Yeah, the sources you've shared highlight some really innovative possibilities for microtransactions and alternative monetization models. It really challenges our existing paradigms of how we value and pay for things online.
Exactly. For example, one source talked about using eCash for things like paying for individual frames of video in a streaming service.
Oh, wow.
It's like moving from a buffet model where you pay a flat fee to eat all you can to an a la carte menu where you only pay for the bites you take.
That's a great analogy. eCash's ability to handle micropayments with such granularity could be revolutionary, especially for content creators. Imagine a scenario where musicians could get paid tiny fractions of eCash for every second someone listens to their song, or writers could earn eCash per paragraph read.
That would be a game changer for independent artists and journalists, giving them more control over their work and how they get compensated. It could even disrupt entire industries that rely on subscription models or paywalls, right?
Absolutely. Think about the potential impact on journalism. With eCash microtransactions, you could have a system where readers directly support the writers and publications they value, paying small amounts for each article they read.
That would be a welcome change from the current advertising-driven model, which often prioritizes clickbait over quality content. And what about the potential to combat misinformation and fake news?
That's an intriguing angle to consider. If people have a direct financial incentive to produce high-quality, accurate content, it could shift the incentives away from sensationalism and towards trustworthiness. It wouldn't be a silver bullet, but it could be a step in the right direction.
It's fascinating to think about how eCash could contribute to a more sustainable and ethical internet ecosystem. But let's not forget about its potential to bridge the digital divide. We talked earlier about how offline eCash payments could empower people in regions with limited internet access.
Yes, that's a crucial point. Offline eCash transactions could provide access to financial services for underserved populations, allowing them to participate in the digital economy in ways that were previously impossible. It aligns with the broader goal of financial inclusion and could have a profound impact on developing economies.
It's almost as if this technology, designed for privacy and individual empowerment, could also be a powerful tool for social good. It really makes you reconsider the role of financial systems in society.
It does. And this ties back to our earlier discussion about central banks and their exploration of eCash for CBDCs. It makes you wonder if they are recognizing the potential of this technology to promote financial inclusion on a global scale.
It's a curious development, especially given their traditional focus on control and oversight. Are they really prepared to embrace the decentralized and privacy-enhancing aspects of eCash?
That's the big question, isn't it? Perhaps they're realizing that in order for CBDCs to gain widespread adoption, they need to address people's growing concerns about privacy and financial surveillance. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah. Shifting gears a bit, one of the sources mentioned that offline e-cash transactions could happen so quickly that they could even be sent via laser signal. That sounds like something straight out of a sci-fi movie.
It does, doesn't it? But it highlights the incredible speed and potential of this technology. Imagine a world where you can make payments as fast as you can transmit data.
That's a mind-boggling concept. Mm-hmm. What kind of impact could that have on industries that rely on high-speed transactions?
The possibilities are vast. Think about stock trading, where milliseconds can make a difference, or the Internet of Things, where devices could make micropayments to each other in real time for services rendered. It opens up a whole new realm of possibilities for machine-to-machine economies.
And let's not forget the role of AI in all of this. One of the sources even described an AI-powered social media bot that generates content and gets paid in Bitcoin via the Lightning Network.
That's right. We're not just talking about humans using eCash and Nostr. We're talking about machines becoming active participants in this new internet economy.
That raises some big questions about the future of work and the relationship between humans and machines. Will AI replace human creators? Or will it become a collaborative tool, augmenting our abilities and allowing us to create and share content in new and innovative ways?
It's a fascinating question that's still unfolding. It's important to remember that AI is a tool, and like any tool, it can be used for good or for ill. It depends on the intentions of those who wield it. The potential is there for AI to empower individuals, but it's crucial that we remain vigilant and ensure that it is developed and used responsibly.
The sources also delve into the concept of blobs, which sounds like another intriguing piece of this decentralized puzzle. Can you explain what blobs are and how they fit into this ecosystem?
Blobs is short for binary large objects, and it's essentially a way to store and manage digital files on a decentralized network. Think of them as files in a decentralized cloud storage system, but instead of relying on centralized companies like Google or Dropbox, they're distributed across a network of independent servers.
So it's like taking back control of your data, not just on social media, but also in how you store your files and digital assets.
Mm-hmm.
One source described a project called Blossom, which uses Nostr public and private keys for user identities and allows individuals to store and manage their blobs on a network of publicly accessible servers.
Yes. Blossom is a great example of how the principles of Nostr can be applied to data storage. Just like with Nostr relays, anyone can run a Blossom server, and users choose which servers they trust to store their blobs.
That's a fascinating concept. Instead of entrusting your data to a single company, you can distribute it across a network, making it much more difficult for hackers or governments to access or censor it.
Exactly. It's a move towards a more resilient and decentralized internet infrastructure, and the potential applications are vast.
Can you give examples of how these blobs might be integrated with other services?
Of course. One obvious use case is for storing and sharing files, much like you would with Dropbox or Google Drive. But imagine a scenario where your Nostr profile picture, instead of being stored on a centralized server, is actually a blob that you control and can easily update or replace. Or imagine podcasters hosting their audio files as blobs, allowing listeners to access them directly without relying on centralized platforms.
That's a great example. It could disrupt the podcasting industry, allowing creators to connect directly with their audiences and potentially even monetize their content in new ways using eCash.
Exactly. And this highlights the interconnected nature of all of these technologies. Nostr provides the decentralized social layer, eCash enables private and efficient value transfer, and blobs offer a secure and censorship-resistant way to store and manage data. Together, they create a powerful foundation for a more open, equitable, and user-centric internet.
It's like we're witnessing the birth of a new internet paradigm, one where individuals have more control and freedom than ever before.
It really is an exciting time to be exploring these emerging technologies, but it's also important to acknowledge that decentralization comes with its own set of complexities and potential downsides. We'll explore these in greater detail in the next part of our deep dive.
This has been an amazing discussion so far. I can't wait to delve into those complexities and see what other surprises await us in the final part of this deep dive. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the deep dive. It's been an incredible journey so far exploring this new internet paradigm powered by Nostr, eCash, and blobs. We've seen the potential for innovation, empowerment, and even social good. But I'm curious, what are some of the challenges and criticisms that this decentralized world faces? Are there any, like, hidden thorns beneath the surface of this technological rose garden?
That's a great question. And it's important to acknowledge that, you know, any paradigm shift comes with its own set of complexities and potential downsides. Decentralization is no exception.
One concern that keeps popping up in the sources is the issue of security. If there's no central authority overseeing these networks, how can we prevent bad actors from exploiting them?
Right. It's a valid concern, and it requires a different approach to security than what we're used to with centralized systems. Instead of relying on a single entity to protect us, decentralized security relies on a combination of cryptography, community vigilance, and well-designed protocols.
So it's more of a shared responsibility, like a neighborhood watch program where everyone plays a role in keeping the community safe.
Exactly. Users need to be more aware of potential risks and take steps to protect themselves, such as using strong passwords, being cautious about phishing scams, and understanding the importance of verifying information. It's a shift from a passive reliance on central authorities to a more active role in safeguarding our own digital lives.
That makes sense. But what about the issue of scalability? Can these decentralized networks really handle the same volume of users and transactions as the massive centralized platforms we're accustomed to?
That's a question that developers are actively working on, and there are ongoing debates about the best approaches. Decentralized systems often face challenges in achieving the same level of efficiency and throughput as centralized systems, which are optimized for handling high volumes of traffic.
So there might be a trade-off between decentralization and performance.
There could be, at least in the short term. But remember, innovation is a continuous process. Developers are constantly exploring new solutions to improve scalability, such as layer 2 protocols that handle transactions off-chain and sharding techniques that break down large networks into smaller, more manageable pieces.
And as we discussed earlier, eCash itself can help alleviate some of the scalability pressure on the Bitcoin blockchain by enabling off-chain transactions. It's like finding creative ways to expand the capacity of a highway without actually adding more lanes.
Precisely. It's about working within the constraints of decentralized systems while pushing the boundaries of what's possible.
Another criticism I've encountered is the fear that decentralization could lead to a fragmentation of the internet, with isolated communities forming echo chambers and amplifying misinformation. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a legitimate concern, and it highlights the double-edged sword of free expression. Decentralization empowers individuals to create and share content without censorship, which is a powerful tool for promoting diversity of thought and challenging dominant narratives. But it also creates spaces where harmful ideas can spread more easily.
So how do we strike a balance between fostering free expression and preventing the spread of misinformation and hate speech? Is it even possible?
It's a complex challenge, and it's not something that technology alone can solve. It requires a multifaceted approach that includes education, critical thinking skills, fostering empathy and understanding, and creating mechanisms for accountability.
Some of the sources point to potential solutions within the decentralized world itself. For example, some Nostra relays require users to pay a fee in Bitcoin to join, which could act as a deterrent for bad actors and help curate communities with shared values.
Yeah, that's one approach being explored. It's having a membership fee for a club, which can create a sense of shared responsibility and incentivize members to uphold the community's standards. Other solutions include developing tools for content moderation and community governance, giving users more control over the information they see and the people they interact with.
It seems like a lot of responsibility is being placed on individuals in this decentralized world. But is it realistic to expect everyone to have the technical expertise to navigate these complex systems and make informed decisions about their online safety and privacy?
That's a valid point, and it highlights another challenge, accessibility. These technologies can be quite complex, relying on cryptography and requiring a certain level of technical literacy. But the good news is that there's a growing community of developers, designers, and educators dedicated to making these tools more user-friendly and accessible.
So it's about building bridges between the technical world and the everyday user, making these tools intuitive and empowering for everyone.
Exactly. It's about democratizing access to these powerful technologies and ensuring that everyone can benefit from the opportunities they offer.
This has been a fascinating and thought-provoking deep dive.
Yeah.
It seems clear that this decentralized paradigm is here to stay. It's not a utopia, and there will undoubtedly be challenges and setbacks along the way. But it's a movement powered by a genuine desire for a better internet, one that is more open, equitable, and empowering for everyone. So thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the decentralized internet. We encourage you to continue exploring these technologies and to engage in these really important discussions about the future we want to create online. Until next time, stay curious and stay engaged.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.